Sam Kajar, writes the poet Emily Dickinson. The soul should always stand ajar, but if the heaven inquires, he will not be obliged to wait, for the shy of troubling the soul. That's quite an image, the soul standing ajar, available to whatever comes along, receptive to sounds and sights outside, ready to be stirred and sidetracked. The soul, that poor place within us, that part which may still remember being part of the stars or the sea, the part which seeks union with other souls and at the same time is unique in itself. There is that place which remains still and unruffled, even as conflict or chaos or indecision or strong emotions swirl around on the surface of life. It can sound pretty esoteric, this soul. A bit pleasant for us rationalists being purely universalists. Not all of us even believe a soul exists or want to talk about it. So maybe we should leave such matters to private contemplation. Except over and over I hear that people want more spirituality. I've heard it from fellow UUs long before I even entered ministry. I hear it from you and I've heard it in other UU congregations. My UU colleagues report that they often hear that yearning expressed. Unless we think this spiritual hunger is endemic only to UUs, my Baptist and Methodist and Jewish and Catholic colleagues report the same longing in their congregations. In the media, we learned that fewer Americans are attending church regularly these days, and they're affiliated a lot less often with organized religion. But an increasing number consider themselves to be not religious, but certainly spiritual. So what does that mean, spiritual? What is a soul? Webster says that spiritual is pertaining to the spirit or the soul, as distinguished from the physical. Spirituality is the quality of being spiritual. Soul is the spiritual part as distinct from the physical. These definitions of spiritual or spirituality or soul don't seem very helpful to me. In fact, they're just running around in circles and telling me nothing. There are other definitions, though, which might actually be helpful. Biblical Hebrew has a wonderful word, ruach, translated as breath, or wind, or soul. In the feast first Hebrew creation myth, God breathes its own breath into a body formed of clay, and that God breath becomes the soul, the animating force, the thing that brings life to the clay and makes it human. That soul is formed by the wind of all creation, the breath of some force beyond easy human understanding, something which inspires awe and sustains life. That concept may be a better definition of soul or spirit. It's something that's ineffable, pleasant, and transcendent. It's God with various understandings of that word. It's a mystical life force or a creative energy, some powerful breath of the holy, perhaps, and it's just as common in theologies that aren't God-centered. Over 900 years ago, the Islamic Sufi poet, Shams ibn Hafiz, wrote, "Cloak yourself 1,000 ways, still shall I know you, my beloved. Veil yourself with every enchantment, and yet shall I feel your presence. I shall salute you in the spring of cypresses, and in the sheen of lakes, in the laughter of fountains, and tumbling clouds, and in brightly embroidered meadows. Oh, most beloved presence, more beautiful than all the stars together, you gladden the whole earth and make every heart great. You are the breathing of the world." And Gwen Foster, known for her exquisite illustrations of animals and birds and plants, wrote just a few decades ago, "Let's just wander here and there, what leaves floating in the autumn air, and look at common little things, stones on the beach, flowers turning into berries. From the winds we'll catch a bit of that wondrous feeling that comes not from seeing, but from being part of nature." These are powerful images, typical of those used to describe matters of the spirit. It often seems that this sense of beauty or awe or wonder arises not in the church, but in nature, or in human contact. At a recent gathering of the ministers, we were asked to introduce ourselves with our name and where we serve and a recent experience of the sacred. We each had one. For some of us, it happened with another person, holding an infant, intimacy with a lover, a deep conversation. But just as often, we felt the sacred in nature or in solitude. By the sea, perhaps, or while climbing a mountain, and on the beauty of a sunset, and the light coming through leaves, and the eerie glory of a solar eclipse. Often these moments when our souls are stirred come when we suddenly notice something that we had not paid attention to before, and put ourselves in places with less distraction than usual, open to whatever comes along. The doors to our souls are ajar, open to the unknown, without any expectation. Sir Thomas Browne wrote a poem over 300 years ago, catching the importance of being empty, of being willing to step into the unknown, where the holy might be encountered. He wrote, "If thou couldst empty all thyself of self, like to a shell disinhibited, then might he find thee on the ocean shelf, and say, this is not there, and fill thee with himself instead. But thou art all replete with fairy thou, and hast such shrewd activity, that when he comes he says, this is seen all unto itself, for better let it be. It is so small and full, there is no room for me." We so easily get so full, so focused. Our lives get so busy, so filled with things and dates and details, doors tightly shut to keep out any distractions, so that we can accomplish and manage all those things with which we have filled our lives. Helen Keller wrote, "The streets of our minds seethe with endless traffic. Our spirits resound with clashings and noise, while something deep within hungers and thirsts for the still moment and the resting lull." We humans long for connection with something outside of ourselves, something deeper within ourselves, for moments of awe. Neptel of Magdeburg was a German Christian mystic who lived more than 800 years ago. She writes, "I cannot dance, O Lord, unless you lead me. If you wish me to leap joyfully, let me see you dance and sing. Then I will lead you to love, and to love and to knowledge, to the knowledge and to the harvest of the sweetest fruit in my human senses. And there I will stay with you fully." I'm from Jusami Shikaka, one of the leading Zen poets of Japan, 700 years ago, a rare woman poet serving in the court of the emperor. "On this summer night, all the hearts were rise asleep, and in the doorway, where once open after that, stands the moon, brilliant, goddess." A door left ajar again, an opening, an empty place from which to notice that which could not have been seen with the doors tightly shut. How can we find that which nourishes our souls? How can we open the door to our souls? What power might we dare to leave it open a bit? And what does it mean when we say that we want more spirituality? I suspect we mean a wide range of things when we say more spirituality. Some of us probably mean transcendence, glimpsing the sacred. Some of us want relief from the trials of regular life, with hope for an island of calm. Others seek for inspiration, rather than nudged out of complacency. For some of us, spirituality would mean a deeper connection with other human beings, or with all of life. For some, spirituality includes a connection to the sacred, to God by whatever name, and for others, God has nothing to do with it. Spirituality may mean wholeness, or hope, or love. It may just mean a rekindled sense of wonder or awe, even of mystery. One of the principles that we learn from universal support with others is encouragement to spiritual growth. Perhaps that's easier to accomplish here than in some of the churches. There's plenty of room here for those who find meaning in the teachings of Jesus, or those who find meaning in the teachings of the Buddha. People who observe Samain and those who observe Yom Kippur are all welcome here. And if your theology changes over time, you won't be ostracized. We welcome questions, and you'll find a wide variety of opinions and experiences and interpretations among us. But sometimes I think finding your own spirituality is harder here, too. If you attend a Baptist church, you'll regularly hear lots about Jesus. And if you're part of a Buddhist sangha, you'll focus on the teachings of the Buddha each time you meet. That won't happen here. There's no central theology. You're welcome to observe sangha in your yoga core, but you may be among very few who find that meaningful. So your experiences will be very different from a congregation where everyone celebrates Easter or Rosh Hashanah or Ramadan together in the same way. And if your theology changes here, no one else may even know. You may not have known exactly what it was to begin with. Which brings up one of our challenges in this spiritual quest. If you're in a church where everyone believes about the same thing, then the people who have time or interest enough to study details of that belief can augment your faith. If the whole church is studying the book of Genesis so that sermons are drawn from it and children's lessons come from it and special events are influenced by it, then you can post it and still share their common exploration. But here, our spiritual journeys are more independent. You may discover something tremendously meaningful as you sit in Zen meditation this morning, or find an amazing passage in Rumi's poetry, or have an experience that transforms you in your volunteer work. But none of these experiences are necessarily meaningful, or intelligent, or even interesting to another of us, especially if we don't encourage each other with another. As you use, we don't share a single kind of spirituality. Unless, perhaps, we become willing to open and feed our souls together and share what we discover. First, we need to be sure that the doors to our souls are kept ajar. Just an opening, just an open door, not a 10-point plan or a series of meetings about how to fill the hole. Very often, the first impulse to an occurring universalist when we decide to deepen a spiritual life is to do something. And we don't much like baby steps. We tend to jump in with both feet, not with our entire bodies. One thing I spirit to practice at all, we enthusiastically commit to meditating at least 20 minutes twice every single day, starting right now. Or we declare our attempt to do Tai Chi every single morning, or journal every evening no matter what. It's not really likely that we'll suddenly and unfailingly carve out these blocks of time with our already overbooked schedules. And not every meditation, or every prayer, or every walk will lead immediately to illumination. In fact, most of them won't. It can be hard to stick to something that doesn't reward us immediately and constantly, especially in our rapid feedback culture. But then when we don't keep up our schedule, when we don't experience some breakthrough immediately, we feel we failed. Spiritual thinking just isn't practical, we decide. We tried it, and it just didn't work. Opening the door is different. It's simply creating space. And you can't borrow someone else's open door. When it's really hot, no matter how many of your neighbors open their doors, your house stays stuck until you open your own door. It's that way with spirituality, too. You'll need to open your own space without knowing what will appear. Just open the space. Create an empty place. Turn off the news when you're driving, leave the headphones at home when you want. Just sit quiet for a few minutes after you wake up and listen to what's around without judging. When you're in conversation with someone, or even in a meeting, find that confidence so that you can notice more. Stop formulating your response and pay full attention to what's being said. Open the space and see what appears. We might even try opening the doors of our souls to each other. This is unfamiliar territory for many of us independent and informing districts, but it's not impossible. Try something simple. At coffee hour today, instead of discussing the business of the church committee, or the latest fiasco in politics and their money to discuss, try opening your soul a tiny book, setting the door just a little ajar. Ask someone where they felt inspired this week, and where they found a moment of power. Tell someone about a moment that moved you and that filled your heart with wonder or beauty. Open your souls to each other intentionally. A church here in Holland is charming. You need to be prepared for the unexpected. When you turn off the radio, you may hear something splendid. And you may also hear the angst in your heart of all the noise of the masses. When you risk sharing a bit of what's deeply important to you, you may find a fellow traveler in unexpected places. And you may discover that some of your thought up there isn't very interesting. Be aware that there are no guarantees on this trip to come. There are days you open the door on something interesting, you'll immediately happen. And there are plenty of days when nothing at all happens. But you're practicing for that in the final world. Sometimes a quiet walk that contains unexpected bird sound, but sometimes all you hear is a jackhammer. There may be a blessing in the jackhammer. You may be part of a conversation about things that matter, and you may find that other people's ideas don't intrigue you at all, as you think of yourself. The discipline of spiritual practice is just that. It takes discipline to keep doing the thing over and over without immediate reward, even something as simple as opening the door and sitting in silence. Another topic that often comes up among our colleagues is the continuing mentality about spirituality. Often we use expect illumination or inspiration or serenity on command. I've read books about it, and I've listened to experts. I've meditated every day for weeks. I've taken mindful walks and lost my breathing, but nothing's happening. I need tranquility. I want enlightenment. I want it now. It doesn't work that way. The door of the soul needs to stand ajar in order for it to grow or stretch. In order for you to get used to cutting that open space. There's no guarantee of what you'll see or what will happen, or the rate at which will happen. Patience will be needed, and perseverance, and continuing to pay attention. The door standing ajar may simply allow us to see wonder in the most mundane things. Two more poems in closing. The first by Barbara Parker is called Ordinary Life. There was a day when nothing happened. The children went off to school without a warning, remembering their bits and lunches and drugs. All morning, the baby and I built block sets and squares of light on the floor, and lunch blended into nap time. I cleaned out kitchen cupboards, one of those jobs that never gets done, then sat in a circle of sunlight and drank ginger tea, watching the birds at the table dance around the steps. The pheasant started from the hedgerow and breathed and flashed through the front. Now a chicken roasts in the pan. And the children return, the memory of their stories back in the air. I peel carrots and potatoes without killing my thumb. We listen together from the field on the ground. Praise before bread. But at the table, actual conversations. No bickering, no quotes. And then the grid back to homework. The baby goes to his house, drives home along the circus ridges and hills. Leaning by the counter, we seal a long, slow kiss for some food and coffee. The chickens diminish to sing and celebrate. The moon to a comet, a silver of light. And this has been a day of grace. In the dead of winter, the hard, cold knuckle of the year, a day that unwrapped itself like an unexpected gift, and the stars turn on the older themselves and waking up. Anthony Chekhov, near Shankola. Go and open the door. Maybe there's a tree, or a wood, a garden, or a magic city. Go and open the door. Maybe a dog will enter. Maybe you'll see a face, or an eye, or the picture of a picture. Go and open the door. If there's a bomb, it won't be. Go and open the door. Even if there's only the darkness coming. Even if there's only the hollow wind. Even if nothing is there. Go and open the door. At least there'll be a dog. Keep the door to your soul ajar. Notice whatever comes along. Don't worry about it.